So, this is always kind of a shocking statement, but dude, 90% of the time, people's offers are good enough to make money. The reason why they don't is because they don't have the first two steps, which is.
Do you like capitalism? Are you a fan of pigs? Well, get ready for today's episode of the Instant Leverage Podcast, where JR will be interviewing the biggest capitalist pig in the digital marketing world. His name is Steven Larson. And don't let his cherubic smiling face deceive you. He loves making money, and he's not afraid to teach you his secrets to success. Strap on your seatbelt, because Steve doesn't hold anything back when he breaks down how he makes decisions that drive his business into the stratosphere. Welcome to the Instant Leverage Podcast.
All right, so we're here with Steven Larson, one of the most respected digital marketers in the game today. Steven, thank you so much for being here.
Dude, thanks for having me, man. I got mad respect for you, and it's been cool to watch you explode, too.
So I have a bunch. I just want to dive into it because I want to make sure that we get to the meat. So first, tell everybody like what you do and then how you ended up doing what you're doing right now.
Yeah. So I build sales funnels, and I'm self-crowned as the offer king. I am really into offer creation, though. You know, in all of marketing, marketing starts at who you're selling. It always does, but really where you're leading them to is an offer. So I'm like, all right, let's begin at the end of mine. Let's talk about the offer. So I started out, I was super poor, like crazy poor. We could barely feed the family, and did 34 product tries over 5 years. I went back and recounted, and it was just like, it sucked. You know, I was clearly bad at it for a long time.
What were some of the worst ones?
Some of the worst ones were diamonds. That was a weird one. there's no blood diamonds or whatever, but like, it was, diamonds was a weird one. I wrote an ebook about how to get straight A's in school. That was dumb. I did one where we were taking 401ks and flipping and rolling them into down payments for big pieces of real estate. That one worked, but like, it was just a really hard pitch. And so it's just, it's mentally exhausting. There's a lot of them, you know?
Okay. So super poor. Like how did you find the internet, like the internet world?
Yeah, I actually was doing a door-to-door sales job and selling pest control. And we were driving out to this area and I was with all my guys and I was looking at these billboards and I was ticked. I was not having a good day at all. The day before I was getting like reamed. People were just super rude. And, you know, so I was in a bad mood and I was looking up at these billboards and I don't know why, but this thought hit me and I was like, people are calling these billboards asking to be sold. I'm waking up trying to go sell people who are not planning on spending any money today. And this is how I got on the internet. And so what I did is I went onto like those free classified ad sites and started putting ads up for our pest control. And my phone started blowing up. And I was getting as many sales over the phone daily as I was for people that I was knocking. And so it doubled my revenue. And I was like, there's something to this internet game. And it kind of like was this taste that got me in there. And that's when I started getting into ads and Pat Flynn, smart passive, you know, income stuff. And that's really the start of it.
Okay. And then you met Russell Brunson by going to an event that you had like no money to go to or something like that.
Yeah, I actually didn't know who he was at all. It was a super dark moment for me. And here's the true story. Here it is. I stole his first course. I straight up stole it. One of his favorite stories. I was like going for this traffic course because it was right after that summer where I learned door-to-door, like what the internet was. And I was like, I got to get traffic. And so this guy's course was totally being bootlegged. And he's like, all right, to make the deal even better, I'll give you this thing called .com Secrets X. And I was like, I don't even, whatever. I don't care about that. Sounds good. This is how I literally found him. And I was going through the traffic course for 3 months in college till 3 a.m. every day, taking notes. And while I was in my marketing degree. And I was like, you know what? That was good. What's this other thing that he gave me? And I opened it up. And that's how I found Russell. And I was like, this is amazing. Who is this guy? And I was in the Army at the time. and it sold me on Russell, and I got his book, and I was reading his book while I was on a security line. And so I have my M16 in my right hand and his book on my left. And that's how I read that book. And anyway, that's how it started.
Nice. So one of the things that I'm super curious about, like I was listening to, I'm a huge like Frank Kern fan. Like that guy could like call me and be like, hey, I need you to like change my tire or whatever. I'll be like I'll be there tomorrow.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. But one of the things that I've heard him say a lot is that if, and this is actually from Dan Kennedy's, like if your product isn't working, it's probably the offer. So what are your principles for, so anybody listening right now, if they have something that's not working, the first thing that they should probably be looking at is what is it that they're offering and making an assessment on that. So what are some things that you see that are commonly wrong with people's offers, and what are some simple hacks to improve them? Because I'll give you a quick story. So I was selling agency coaching, basically. So I was working with agency owners and helping them get more clients and stuff like that. And I'm looking around and I'm like, everybody else is selling agency coaching, and I could like sit here and be like, oh, mine's better because, you know, I know my stuff and I'm the only one, and like be on this high horse, like most people are, right. Like most coaches are. But I'm like, on a surface level, like if I was going into a store and my product was on a shelf, how would it differentiate from the next agency coach? So I thought about that for a long time. And then eventually we added in, now, when you sign on with us, we find, hire, and train a virtual assistant for you that's trained in client acquisition tasks, revenue generating tasks. So landing you appointments from day one. Yeah. Instantly by adding that, we just 10X the people that we're talking to. Everybody's super excited. We're not really like, we would get a lot of people that were shopping us. They're like, oh, I'm talking to you and this guy and that guy. Now we don't really get that because there's no one else that's really offering like what we're offering the way we're offering it. So that was when I really learned, like, I can never again sell something that someone else is selling just because I think I can market it better, or because I know I write copy better, or because I know I have like a following or whatever. It's just making your life a lot harder. So what common things do you see that are wrong with people's offers, and what are some easy fixes to just add more value to that offer?
Yeah. Yeah. You actually opened up the can right there actually. So products and offers are different. And I think the first big mistake is that people don't know that. And so a quick example, I really like Claude Hopkins. I like old school dead marketers because I like to see how what they had to go do to sell stuff versus what we do now. There's a lot of lessons.
Dude, David Ogilvy, like he's like my favorite.
That dude's awesome. So Claude Hopkins tells this really cool quote. You know, he's like, hey, two guys offered me a horse. They both said the horses are amazing. A child could ride them. The first man said, take the horse, buy the horse. And if you don't like it, just come back in a week and I'll give you your money back. Second man said, take the horse for a week. If you like it, then pay me at that time. I naturally bought the second man's horse. And you think about that and it's like, it's the same product, but one's an offer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really interesting. Both horses, one's an offer. And so when someone has a cool product, the act of taking it from product to offer, that there's a lot of marketing that goes in right there. And what you're really playing with is value. I was thinking about this the other day. In fact, I was voxing Russell. I was like, dude, I just had this huge realization on what value is, because we all know what price is. We know what cost is. What's value? And value is really just determined by what's useful. And so I was at this event once and I was sitting down and there was a guy, I always hate it when they do this, but you meet cool people and they do it. They're like, hey, welcome to the event. Turn to your neighbor and say hi. You know, I was like, ugh. So, you know, I turned to the guy and it was Dan Kennedy's ghostwriter. And he and I started chatting and we became friends. And he has this book, and his formula for offer was offer equals core product plus value add. And I was like, that's a brilliant way to do it. Because a lot of times people think that an offer is you just add more stuff, you know, like the stack slide.
Right. That's what I was basically like. Now that I think about it, that's what I was basically like lumping product and offer together. But I also realized a key shift that we made was our guarantees. Like, hey, 6 months, you don't make your initial investment, we'll refund you your money and you can keep the VA and the training and this other bonus that I gave them. And I didn't even realize that I added that, and that was part of the success. I added that when I added the VA.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like the value add is the huge. And so what we started doing was I started listing out like what actually causes value to increase. And so I made a huge list, and one of them is guarantees, kind of like, it's the Tim Ferriss lose win guarantee thing. You know, if people aren't familiar with that, basically he was selling the supplement and he's like, people weren't buying it. And he was getting a standard refund rate of like 15% or whatever in the supplement game. And so what he did is he said, hey, I'll give you 110% of your money back. So I'll give you 10% more than you paid. If the first dose doesn't work within 1 hour, and it'll be a 60-day instead of a 30-day. And his like fear was that people are going to take advantage of this. And he said there was a few people that did, but it tripled his sales. It tripled his sales within like a month, and then dropped his refund rate from 15% to 3%. And you think about that, like, well, all he did was increase the usefulness of the core product. Anyway, so those are my favorite ways to go do it. I think the biggest thing people struggle with, though, is they don't actually know what a funnel is. If people have take a time to sit back and think through, like, because ClickFunnels did not invent funnels, you know. A funnel at the core, we used to sit around trying to figure out, man, like, what is a funnel? What is a funnel? Like, how do you describe that to somebody, you know? And
I still don't know. I'm like, is it the ad and the landing page and the thank you page and the emails, or is it just the conversion pages?
Because it can get as complicated as we choose it, because it's like, it's not a small thing. So at the core, a funnel is just a message and an offer. And so if I stand up on stage and I deliver a message and an offer, I'm the funnel, because I'm the one that delivered those things. And so it's just the fact that we put it on ClickFunnels is a method. It's a powerful one because it's measurable and consistent, you know, but it's a message and an offer. So I'm going to deliver that. I could deliver it by doing ads, by doing podcasts, by whatever. And then making an offer at the end of it, that's a funnel. It's like the first caveman, you know, to trade like a fish for a rock, you know, like that was a funnel. And the reality is like most people, if they sold anything ever at any time on accident, they had a funnel, but people don't really turn their product into an offer and they don't make a message. So the funnel's just not on purpose. That's really the big.
So one thing that I see people kind of twofold, just because I'm bad at remembering my questions and if they're in my head and not out loud. How do people improve the offer of their standard coaching? Because like a lot of the times coaching is like, you know, a course, a group call a week, and a Facebook group or whatever, and maybe some bonuses. And then the second question is, how do people improve their offer for a service, for example, like SEO, PPC, Google ad, or Facebook ads, or something like that?
Yes, how to turn those into offers, how to make them offers. I had this really cool teacher in college. He was the CMO of Denny's and Pizza Hut. He invented stuffed crust pizza as a promo and then became this thing. And he was like one of the first guys that gave me like one-on-one, you know, mentorship, basically. And I asked him, I was like, where do all the ideas come from? And he told me that he's like, you know, it kind of happens while you're out and about and listening. But one of the biggest principles I ever heard from him was, he's like, you're not the one that's buying this thing, Stephen. Like, stop caring so much if you like it. And he taught me to listen to the market and how to do that. So there's a semester where all we did was create a business from scratch. And that was the whole semester. And they were not allowed to help us. And so it was a real company. And if you didn't make money, like you failed this whole semester. So it's like, and they weren't allowed to intercede at all. So like you had to get really good at asking questions because they wouldn't interfere. These are all like professional people. It was really cool. One of the things he taught me though is how to think, and which was really offensive at first. I was like, what do you mean? I know how to think. But he taught me how to think. And basically what he did is, they put me in the food industry and I am not good at cooking at all. And I don't want to be. So I was like, and I was doing enough business stuff. They voted me as the CEO. And I was like, I don't want to be the CEO of this food thing. I know how to make toast, you know, like that's it. And so anyway, they're like, you got to go build this business. So it was me and 15 students. And I was like, let's just go into the cafeteria and ask people what they wish they could eat. So we spent a whole day surveying and people were like, empanadas. And I was like, I don't even know what that is. Who knows what empanada? Okay, sweet. The next day we went back in, we're like, what flavor? And people are like, only authentic Mexican flavors, you know, carne asada and pizza. I was like, okay. So we got carne asada pizza. And the next day we went back out and I was like, what price point would you pay for this? They're like $7.50, you know, just ballpark, you know, averaging down. What would you want with it? Chips and drink. What logo do you like? This one. What they like? And literally they built the entire company for us. And we ended up making $3,000 a week selling empanadas to poor college students. And it made me realize like get out of my own way. And so when someone's trying to create an offer, one of the biggest things they could ever go do is I actually have it's called my problems whiteboard. And it's a whiteboard where I keep track of problems, not to try to solve them, to try to figure out if I should solve them. And so what I do is I think about my product and I think about my service or whatever it is I'm providing, and I'm listening to the market and I'm saying, everyone has a problem on this, 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 this. And I start figuring out which of those problems to go solve. Not all problems pay you the same. You know, it's like I could figure out how to put groceries in a bag, but that doesn't pay you very much. You know, so I'm like, I got to figure out, here's all the issues they're having. And I start circling the ones that are really valuable, that would be valuable for them and I could charge for. And solving those problems is how I turn my product into an offer most of the times. I'm like, okay, you're having an issue around these things. I'm willing to go solve that. Here's how I'll solve it. And I'll give that away for free when you buy the product, and it turns it into an offer. It's one of the most, that was a really long answer, but it's one of my rinse and repeat ways of doing it.
So tell me about a time where you had an offer product or both that didn't work, and an example of a tweak that you made that made it explode.
Yeah. So this is always kind of a shocking statement, but dude, 90% of the time people's offers are good enough to make money. The reason why they don't is because they don't have the first two steps, which is they have to know who they're selling and they have to know the market that they're going to. And it's a big distinction to realize that a market is not a person, it's a location. So like, who's your target market? It's like, that's not actually even a sentence. It's where is your market and who is your dream person who's going there? And it's like, if I go to the farmer's market, I get up and I go to the farmer's market because I'm not the market, you know? And so this, I launched this product. One of my first two comic book awards was this product I did called Secret MLM Hacks. It was my fifth launch on that product to figure out how to make it to sell. And what I changed was the who and the market, not the offer. And almost every single time, that's the tweak that makes it sell. It's like, once you have the offer and you know it's amazing, I actually don't touch the offer that much anymore. What I'm looking for is the correct match between my dream buyer and where they're consistently traveling to. And then I just meet them there and drop my messages. That changed. So when I was selling MLMers and network marketers a product about how to build MLM funnels, but I was selling them in the MLM market location, dude, they don't want to know how to do that stuff. It sucked so bad, man. It was like broke as a joke. People weren't buying it. The moment I added the market location of like ClickFunnels and like that cross section, I was like, okay, if you are an MLMer and you already know what a funnel is, then you are my dream market attendee. But without those two together, it was cool about that is that it helped me realize that the markets what is educating my dream customer for me. Beforehand, I had to be like, here's what a funnel is, you know, because they didn't know what they were. So I was like, here's what a funnel is. Here's what upsells are. Have you ever heard average cart value? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so what I realized is that if I choose my market with enough intent, it actually educates my dream customer for me to a certain level. And then I just wait and pick them off the top. And I was like, that's sick. So it was those combinations right there. And as soon as we made that together, it was like ClickFunnels marketplace with the MLM marketplace, that little cross section, that was when it exploded.
Yeah, I've noticed too in our ads that our ads, the way that they perform is it's like 90% who I'm talking to and the offer. So now I put the product offering. So now I put those two things in the first line. And it's kind of funny because like at one point, like my headline on the ad was like, hey, he's like, do you run a marketing agency and want a $3 an hour virtual assistant to do your client acquisition? And I, by simply just taking out the word marketing, because we ran it with that without marketing, it just said, do you run an agency? Completely different person. We would get like insurance agencies and stuff like that. And then we added marketing agency. And now it's like SEO agencies, Facebook ad agencies, stuff like completely different people that we were talking to. It was insane.
Yeah.
So what are some, like right now, give me a breakdown of like, what products are you selling or what's your best performing product right now?
Something called OfferLab. OfferLab is like 40 grand and we build someone's funnel. We'll just drive ads to an application phone call kind of thing. Mm-hmm. We shut down a few of the other webinars that I was running, but we're in the middle of spinning up some others. So it's not like I can't give you awesome numbers because we're in the middle of the transition. But some of my best performing stuff, not revenue, just performance. You know, I look at a lot of people have heard the term value ladder. And I look at value ladders a little bit differently than most people. Like their roles. Each step in the value ladder has a unique purpose. Things at the bottom of a value ladder. This is the reason I haven't written a book, is because things at the bottom of the value ladder, the only purpose it has is to create sales noise and leads. That's really it. I'm not trying to make money there. It's a break-even activity phase of the value ladder. Everything in the middle is, the reason I build things in the middle is when I'm trying to cover or replace business systems cost again, like the cost of my team, you know, the cost of all of my, all the tools that we use and everything. So I know like my team costs me typically 40 to 50 grand a month. And I'm like, okay, well, what 40, 50 grand a month revenue thing can I create to replace that cost again? Now let me do it again. Now let me do it again. Now we're super secure. Awesome. And I'm like, cool. Now once I've done that, the stuff at the top of the value ladder is where I personally get paid out big and put into personal investments. And so that kind of like leads and sales, business systems, personal payout. And that's how I look at it. So I'm in a spot right now where I'm not like, I don't need more leads. We have more than I can handle. My business systems are largely getting paid for, but I want to do it again. And it's the stuff at the top that I'm continuing to spin up and like perfect on. And that's so kind smart. Of how I treat it.
So smart, because you can afford to lose money on the front end, knowing that there's a big back end, and you can afford to pay more for leads than other people.
Totally.
That's kind of like what we're working on right now is, and I'm kind of, so I'm a very like one trick pony. Like we have one product, 5K. It's all my resources, all my ads, our whole team is focused on that. But I'm kind of thinking like, logically, I think the next step would be like something like what you said, like a back end, like a big back end, 30, 40K, where we could afford to break even, pay more for leads on the front end. Yeah. And then the other thought that I'm toying with is like, I have an idea for, I'm totally liberal with my ideas. So like people can steal them and I'm like, I don't mind, but I have an idea for a product called VSLs that write themselves, cool. On how to write a VSL for your agency. And I'm thinking that could be a way. I look at our ad spend and I'm like, man, if I could just make that pay for ad spend, that'd be awesome. So, but I haven't seen that model. I mean, not that it hasn't been done, but like what Russell does is like, okay, the low ticket book, you know, $7 for the book, all these upsells, hopefully that pays for traffic or makes a little bit of money on the front end. Yeah. So how do you decide like what product makes sense to make next? And then how do you focus? Like, how do you make sure you're not doing too much? Cause I notice you do a lot. Like you have a Facebook group, you're always on podcasts. You have a podcast, you have this 40K backend thing. You have all these other products, you do live events. So how do you organize that? And in a way that makes sense and is like all working together so that you don't feel like everything you're doing is just like an isolated thing. That's not with one main purpose.
Yeah. Dude, that's a cherry question right there. I don't know that I have an exact model this answer because you know, sometimes it's just like, ooh, interesting. I don't really suffer from shiny object syndrome that much anymore, because I really did for a little while.
Dude, it's a quick story. I wrote a $5,000 check to the KKK last year. And I said, if I deviate from this project for the next 6 months, I mailed it to my friend, Sema, which, you know,
yeah,
it was her responsibility to make sure I didn't deviate. And if I did, she got to mail this check to the KKK. Like, I have a picture of it. It legitimately says Ku Klux Klan. But I focused for 6 months. I didn't do anything else. I didn't do any like podcasts. And the contract was very specific. It was like, I cannot focus on anything else other than this offer, not limited to, but including things like Bitcoin and affiliate marketing and stuff like that. And it worked. Like, I became so much happier. I became so much more focused. I can like sit down and not feel like I need to check Instagram every 5 minutes. Yeah. And it made me like go do or die. Cause I had a habit of shiny object syndrome. Something stops working after the third attempt. I'm like, it's probably not going to work, whatever. Yeah. Versus this, I made it work. So, anyways, back to what you were saying.
Yeah. No, that is awesome, man. That is awesome. Russell and I, I think we wrote checks to each other. I thought we did that. If not him, then it was with another buddy, but it was like, hey, if you don't get done what you said you're going to, I'm going to cash your $2,000 check, you know, yeah, like enough to like hurt.
Dude, it works.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know what to build next. What I really do is I look to see, it's kind of a combination of things. So I design out what the value ladder is. And it's a combination of quite a few things, actually. I only do affiliate marketing if it is, first of all, congruent with my message, and it's something that's inside the marketplace that I've chosen to serve. So I only choose one market to serve, mm-hmm, which for me is ClickFunnels. I'm like, ClickFunnels is going to be my marketplace. They attract so much of my dream customer. I just have to go there, and ClickFunnels is this massive machine bringing people to me, you know? And so I'm going to go serve there. And this is a strategic move I just made. So, but what I do though, that's why I do so much affiliate marketing with Russell's stuff, because I know if I promote his thing, I'm going to ride the wave of the noise that he's creating.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise I got to go make the wave on my own. And so like his Traffic Secrets book, we planned that campaign probably 6 months in advance. It's why I had him come speak, or asked him to anyways, at my last big event, to use that speech as a bonus if somebody got it through me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I always time it that way. They're on my list and I can go start promoting it for other things. So affiliate marketing for me, I don't consider myself like a pro affiliate, but that's the reason I do it, to match those things. The things in the middle. So I always start in the middle or the top. Every time I'm starting a brand new value ladder, if I start at the bottom, there's not enough revenue or volume for me to be sustainable.
Yeah, I feel the same way. It's not exciting enough.
No. You got to sell like a million knickknacks at $3 to make a million. Oh, that's a million transactions. Oh. So I always start in the middle. Then I usually go to the top. Then I go down to the bottom. But it's always secondary to me creating content. Content creation for me is like, start that immediately, and it's how you control traffic. So my model is, it's the same model every time. It's publish, 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 document what you're doing, document what's happening, and then launch whatever you're doing to the listeners. And then you take that money and you go dump it into evergreen campaigns. I started realizing there's a huge difference between like launch activities and evergreen activities, like put it in orbit and keep it in orbit. So I take the launch activity revenue. I don't take profit. I just go dump it into my evergreen stuff, and that's how I get paid. And I'm like, sweet, let's go remove that cost. And then we'll make the little knickknack for a little SLO. Then let's go remove that cost. So I don't, at a macro level, that's kind of how I kind of do it. But I design my value ladder. I think through what it is I want to go create. For example, people really want a mastermind from me. They want me to write a book. People want to do one-on-one coaching with me. I don't provide any of those things. It's a combo between what the market says they're wanting from me, so I'm listening to them, solving problems that I know are valuable, but also what I'm willing to do. And really that combination with like the way I build stuff in the value ladder is kind of how I decide it. So it's a weird answer, but.
So what percentage of your revenue comes from, say, organic marketing, like the content that you post and stuff like that, versus your ads? And I know it's not like, they're not like completely separate things. They kind of work together. But if you had to guess.
I'm such a believer in consistent content creation, like, cause I like 80% of my sales noise and revenue really comes from my content. It's only because that's where we do all our testing to figure out if something's awesome. And then if it's amazing, we'll go kick ads on and it's awesome. But it's always when I'm also publishing that the ads seem to work really well.
Yeah. I've noticed that as well. What is your system for content creation or consistent content creation? How does that work, like between all platforms?
Yeah. So I used to just do it on my own, but it's way too intense. So I tied together a whole bunch of agencies with just a Trello board. And every time the sound people would go in and balance the audio, make sure it sounds awesome, put the intro and outro on. You know, then they'd pass that to the bloggers, and the bloggers would go turn that into an awesome blog post. At the same time, the video people would go in and, put in the splash graphics and the exits and all that stuff. And then go pass that off to the Instagram. They take cool snapshots of me pointing or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was this huge process. It was literally 121 steps. It is expensive, man. It was like 15 to 20 grand a month to run that thing. Mm-hmm. And it worked, but it was expensive. And so I found a way to do it where now it's just, I hire one agency and I took that system and I taught them how to do it. And I said, this is exactly what I want you to go do. So it's a one-stop shop for me now, which is great. But I treat it just part of my normal routine. So for a while it was Tuesdays, just my content day, you know, Monday for me now is my new content day, Monday afternoon. That's when I get on interviews. That's when I create stuff. And then I don't think about it. And I always try to make it so there's 1 to 2 episodes going out a week, and I'm always 6 weeks ahead. And so if I'm traveling or whatever, so that's kind of how I do it. So we used to do it in the model of like, what's going on right now? And I would go that's how I make my episodes. And it was really good as a riffing model, or just me to riff and think through ideas and test them and see if the market liked them. The problem is that's not what people are always searching. And so we've kind of transitioned into a melded model where now I'm like, cool, what are the biggest keywords in ClickFunnels? Let's take that long tail keyword. That's the podcast title. I'm going to riff about that. And it made our stuff more searchable.
Nice. Yeah. Dude, I'm so impressed. Like, I feel like you're very like introspective with these answers. Whereas before, maybe it's just your evolution, or maybe my perception of your evolution, it was just like energy, 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 hype, hype, hype. And I feel like now you're more like transitioning into like the CEO, like step back, look at everything working together.
I appreciate that.
Make decisions based on that. What do you found has been the biggest things for putting out relevant content and building a following of people who actually care about what you have to say?
Dude, I figured something out around this that was like cherry. It's the whole reason why I do the Capitalist Pig thing. Mm-hmm. Because I stumbled on that. I stumbled on the boom, you know, I stumbled on the it's Monday baby thing. Those are personality quirks that I'm just capitalizing on because I do yell a lot, man. I usually am pretty energetic. But the Capitalist Pig thing, it was actually when I was becoming an officer, in the Army. I was in the semester where all we did was study wars and battles, and it's kind of like football plays, like this commander moved here and this guy moved there. And it was really interesting. It's fascinating. It was a lot of, you know, tactician kind of stuff. At the end of the semester where this historian was just teaching like crazy, he made this off the cuff comment, and he kind of like leaned back and he goes, oh, you know, what's crazy is after looking after this stuff for so long, you realize that there's pretty much never been a war started because of social issues. He said, wars always start because of rights, states' rights, specifically in America. And I was like, I never thought about this. I was deep into Russell Brunson stuff at that point too. I was like, I didn't know the difference between states' rights and social issues. That was never brought to my awareness. And I made a decision. I was like, I'm never going to make a political stance in my branding, but social issues. What social issues could I get behind that I believe in that already have noise? Because I realized, like, okay, as a marketer's role really is to just introduce products to markets. That's it. And you're going to do it with noise. And I can either spend my lifetime creating noise. Like, I mean, Russell Brunson is a freaking brilliant genius, right? And they have this huge powerhouse. They've got 400 employees. They've got like huge budgets. I mean, they're making so much money. It's ridiculous. And people are just barely outside of the ClickFunnels bubble starting to understand who they are. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of activity to create noise. And I was like, I could one, create noise, or number two, I could align with where noise already is. A social issue. How can I ride, like I ride waves in markets and riding like a product launch? Dude, I could ride a wave in social world. All right. Like, the battle between capitalism versus socialism has been around forever. All I got to do is take a stand, be willing to feel the whiplash heat, which definitely came from that. But I'm going to be able to sell my products and services on the back of it. So the capitalist pig shirt is me riding the wave. I mean, I can't tell you walking around stores how many people are like, oh, I freaking love that shirt. That's awesome. And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, capitalismswag.com. They're like, no way, that's awesome. I was like, that's you pointing. I was like, it is me. They're like, oh my gosh. Right. And then I get the exact opposite. F you, you're terrible. What's wrong with you? It's usually the hippies. They're not going to do anything anyway. They're too peaceful. But that's exactly, it's worked, you know? And now I can talk about capitalism and under the theme of that, ride this wave. That has been one of the greatest like audience growth hacks I've ever experienced ever. And it's, you got to be willing to take some heat for it, but, that's been fun.
Yeah. I think my problem is I go too far.
Sure.
Like the other day.
Totally can. Yeah.
There's this conspiracy theory that like Bill Gates created coronavirus or whatever.
Yeah, I've heard.
And
yeah.
I made a Facebook post and I was like, Bill Gates is not the Antichrist. Everyone shut the fuck up. In retrospect, I'm like, that probably wasn't the best way to get my point across. But it was just, I was like watching this Bill Gates documentary about how he like introduced sanitation to these third world countries. And I'm like, how could anybody like say anything bad about this dude without having like a solid evidence?
Yeah.
So we have time for like one more question. I actually think I'm over time, but what is your day look like, and what are your habits that you feel like have helped make you successful or like think better on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, I love that question. You know, I was like super shy as a kid growing up, so I wouldn't be doing anything I am now. So it's been fun to kind of just, I was telling a friend last night, I was like, it's cool that like this journey exposes and accelerates self-discovery. Like has to, you know, as a default. So I don't have like the perfect answer on this because it's something I'm still in the middle of, but there's a book. Oh my gosh. I'm going to forget the name of it. Basically, PhD guy was going out and figuring out what motivates human beings. It's Darren. Cannot remember the last name. Anyway, found out that motivation is crap and is not what changes behavior. And he said, there's only one thing that changes behavior, and that's environment. You know, if I just get up and go in the gym, even if I don't feel like it, because I'm in the environment, I will typically do that activity. My desk is an environment where I can actually, basically what he found out, oh, willpower doesn't work. I think that's the name mm-hmm. of the book. Basically, I don't trust my will entirely. My will is lazy. My will is like a river and will take the path of least resistance, you know? And we're all that way. And so little tricks that I've done is to, like, I always have a standing meeting with my team first thing the day starts. And it's
game changer.
Yeah. Game changer. Less that there's a daily meeting, which is still necessary. It's more to make sure my butt is in my seat.
Yeah. And he gets me in the state of like, okay, now it's time to work every time.
Yeah. I do the exact same thing. Like, that's why I do interviews also. It keeps me sharp. Otherwise, like, it's one of my tactics. I have interviewsteve.com, which anyone who's listening or watching this now should go get interviewtheirname.com. I think I've done 300 interviews now. Most of my ideas come when I'm talking to someone on an interview, which is one of the reasons I do it. And it keeps me sharp. So it's just these little things and understanding where you're weak and creating environments, not will. Like, discipline, amazing. Discipline is sexy. It's so cool. But in reality, like, discipline is determined on your will. I don't always trust my will. I got to create an environment. And so I have coaches all over the place, man. I got this guy. I call him Meathead Trevor, but I never have to his face because he's 260 pounds of pure muscle. The dude shows up in the morning and lifts with me and freaks me out. It reminds me of my drill sergeants back in the day. He's like, I know that I won't go do that every single day. There's going to be times I don't feel like it. But because Meathead Trevor's coming over, I'm going to do it. Someone makes all my food because I will not learn to cook and make good choices on my own because I'm too busy or I'm just not, I don't care. And so she delivers all my meals on Sunday for the entire week. And I just open the next one, microwave it, and eat it. And it, she talks to my trainer and they just adjust my macros because I don't trust my will. I have trainers and coaches everywhere. I have a therapist, I have a counselor, I have a psychiatrist, and I just surround myself with coaches. And because otherwise it's very hard to grow yourself on your own because it sucks.
So. Dude, that's so key. You got me thinking, like, I just by saying environment, like, I'm like, how can I create a better environment? Like, I should have stuff on the walls that say like focus, like a picture. I mean, I have this like Michael Jordan canvas, and it's just like for that, for environment. But I'm like, I need more of that. And that's awesome. And I've noticed the same thing. Like, also one big hack for me is like, I put barriers between me and like bad things that I shouldn't be doing, like watching Netflix and stuff like that. Like, I don't have a smart TV purposely. I have a Chromecast that I have to plug into the TV and then stream. And during times of like productivity, I just completely unplug that. So that way, if I want to go on Netflix or something, it's a huge hassle to do so. I also use this app called Freedom. And it blocks everything like YouTube, Facebook. It blocks Instagram, the apps on my phone. And it's on all the time. And the only way that I can turn it off is by literally logging out of the app. So it's just a huge hassle. And then I log out of all of the, I don't have the apps for these things and I log out of them all individually. So if I do, and I don't know the passwords, but I have them like noted down. So if I do want to log in, it's just a huge hassle. And then I usually, by the time I go to do that, I catch myself and I'm like, oh, this is probably not the thing that I should be doing. And another thing that on what you said, just said, I think everybody should start a podcast because for example, for me, I'm huge on focus. So I don't subscribe. I would love to feel like I could subscribe to like all the great marketers and pay attention to what they're doing, but I would just never get anything done. No. Because that would just become my like Netflix basically. Yeah. So I unsubscribe from everything. I have everything blocked. If you go on my YouTube, like there's no news feed, there's no Facebook news feed. I don't have any of this stuff. But the problem was I got into this bubble where it's just like me and me. And I'm like, I want to know like what's working. Or I want to be able to pick people's brains. So I started this podcast as a remedy for that because like, I don't want to have to go out of my way to pay attention to what everybody's doing all the time. I'd rather just ask people things that are relevant to me and my situation. And by doing that, I'm sure there's other people out there that are in a similar situation or have similar questions that can gain similar value. And that's how the Instant Leverage podcast was born. So that being said, last question before I go, what are some immediate, like, What is the biggest thing you've done in your business that has created the most upside for the minimum amount of effort? So what has created the most leverage in your business?
Yeah, honestly, without even thinking, it goes back to content. I did not want to do it. It's always the answer that I give, but like people don't want that to be the answer, but it's so true. It's like, and it's because I mean, there are thousands of hours literally of me on the internet now, and which is crazy. Like the whole 10,000 hour, there's thousands of hours just of me on, like, which is crazy because of how much sharper you get. And there's this authority thing that comes with it. And I hate when people do things strictly for authority. It drives me nuts. It's like, that comes, you know, what's your motivation? Who cares? It's true though, you know, things like video or podcasts or blog, the moment you're featured in one of them, there's this instant authority that humanity naturally credits to you makes it easier to sell. You know, it's like, good example. Let's say, you know, someone watching or listening to this now, let's say that you are now the CEO of ClickFunnels. You're the CEO of ClickFunnels. And just think with me for a moment. It's like, okay, you have been given the responsibility of increasing memberships of ClickFunnels users. Like, what do you do? You know, think about that for a moment. It's like, whoa, you know, and if you're going to go target a market to go bring customers in, like you ask yourself, this is a key thing. This has been one of my greatest sales tricks ever and why podcasting is so big. Cause like, would you as a ClickFunnels CEO get faster success with people coming from Wix or from lead pages? You think about that, like, who would have faster success with ClickFunnels? Someone from Wix or lead pages? Probably someone from lead pages, because they already know what a lead is. People from Wix, they probably just want a pretty website. They may not even know what a funnel is. Like, they've never even heard of a lead, maybe even, right? They're just like click, drag, and drop. I mean, you see the people they got promoting it. They're not marketers. People from lead pages, though, they probably have heard of SMTP, right? Or they probably have heard of an upsell. They probably heard of, and realizing that certain marketplaces are positioned close to yours, that's like a huge deal. So when I start going in and creating podcast content and it's seamless and it's easy and I'm talking, and I'm specifically creating content for a specific marketer, those are like free ads that live forever. And I'm like, hey, if I'm the CEO, now let me go create content, because thank you, Lead Pages. You have now educated that dream customer of mine to a certain point. I don't have to take them from zero all the way up. They're already here. I just got to make content for that specific listener when they get to that kind of understanding. And it's like these drop in the hat sales. And it's, I know it is one of the biggest reasons I've ever, why it's blown up so much.
All right. Last question. I promise I'll leave you.
Bring it, bro.
I've been reading the book, Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. Yeah. It's about this guy. I don't know if you're familiar.
Yeah. Good book.
Goes to concentration camp, finds meaning in being there. I'm probably 70% of the way done. So where does meaning in your life come from? And if the answer is work or partially work, how do you find meaning in that?
The answer actually isn't work. I value mastery just like crazy. You know, I don't care what is in. It's like when I see someone who's like a bodybuilder, I'm like, dang, that is so much mastery involved with that. You know, the fulfillment you must get from that is so cool. No one else can do that work. You can't lie your way into that. You know, I think that's just so amazing. Self-mastery. That's one of the reasons I love the entrepreneur game so much, is like, I'm forced to grow when I don't want to. It's like, but it's training me to want to. And that, I get a lot of fulfillment from that. My meaning, there's not a doubt in my mind that there's been parts of this that like I felt very led by God, and it's not for me. Like all this, it's not for me. It's not so that I can turn around and just sit on a mansion and be rich and alone. Like that's not why I'm doing this. I know that. I saw that clearly at ClickFunnels when Russell was there. The dude has enough money. Like, why is he still doing it? He has so much money. It's ridiculous. But when I walk into that room, when you walk into his office, when you walk into the building, there are moments where I felt like I'm walking on hallowed ground. And it sounds crazy. And I know those people might not like that when they hear it. And I know that there's flaws and I know that there's bugs sometimes. But what he's doing and what he's educating people on is what I believe capitalism is about, which is self-reliance. That's meaningful. And when I get messages from people, they're like, hey, I afforded Christmas, you know, or hey, you know what I mean? Like that gives a ton of meaning. That's the reason you do that. Cause you just changed the freaking genealogy of that person. So the tree that comes from them now, like if they can think differently about money, realize that they actually have been given like these levers back in their life and start moving forward. That is one of the coolest feelings on the planet. When you stand on stage and you see there's this moment, I know the moment, it always puts a smile on my face. My therapist has me imagine it all the time. And it's when I can see someone's face and they're like, their eyes, something happens in their eyes and they go, oh my gosh, wait. And suddenly the horizon for them just got a lot cooler and closer. And what they realize is that it's been there all along. They just haven't been looking. That's fun. Yeah.
Great answer. All right, dude. I wish we could spend a whole nother hour. I just have so much that I still want to know. So hopefully we can have you back on another time, but thank you so much for coming on here and being part of this and like letting me pick your brain and giving such good, like introspective answers. This has been very like enlightening for me in terms of like what to do. I'm going to literally go like study you intently right after this. So thank you so much for coming on. And I look forward to just like following your journey, going to your next event, whenever that is. And I'll let everybody know when that is or where we can find you and anything like that.
Yeah, it was all the crap going down right now, which, you know, I don't believe this is ever going to go back to normal. You know, the market's been educated. Hey, we can do this way more isolated, you know, so I don't think it's going to go back to the way it was ever. But so God willing, hopefully the event will be happening in September in San Diego, which is the event I rode. We actually got the same room that I rode my bike to get to the first Funnel Hacking Live when I was bootstrapping there. It's kind of a full circle thing. So anyway, so it's in September. If you go to offermind.com, all the details are there.
Cool, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks, brother.
Hey, if you enjoyed this podcast, and I'd be forever grateful if you left us a 5-star review on the app you're listening on so we can help more people. And if you want more content like this, then click that subscribe button now. And until next time, my friends, stay leveraged.